The following podcast is recorded and produced by the Podcast Precinct in affiliation with the network at bicbp-radio.com. The Podcast Precinct. Consistency, creativity, culture.
I've started all the... Did you start?
Yes, I did. Now you started this one too. Thank you for stealing that. Thank you for stealing that from me to start the episode.
Welcome back to the Saturday Night Theater
this
Podcast.
This is mine. Welcome back to the Saturday Night Theater Podcast. I'm your host, DJ Swartz.
And you all know me already, so...
Okay. I can't stand it here. This is another one where we're filming on an off day.
Sorry.
Alex is once again messing
fault.
Up the schedule. If either of us stay in Buffalo for over a week, we will combust. So we're here on a Wednesday. This podcast might be posted sooner. It's
Sorry.
Chaos. It's
hey,
just chaos.
It'll make up for lost time.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, what's going to happen next Sunday?
What's
not this
Sunday?
Coming, the following.
What's
we're not going to be here.
Why?
You and me.
Oh, we're going to Cedar. Oh, yeah. We really cannot just stay in one spot.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, yeah, so we'll figure that out.
It's okay if we both miss, but if I miss.
Yeah. That's correct. Okay, today we have a very special guest with us, my father, Eldon Swartz, in the room.
Yay.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to count how many this was. I didn't get around to it for you.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's got to be like six.
Is it really that
Maybe
many?
Maybe six yeah. or seven or something.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yay.
It's great to have you on. We're going to skip the beef. We're going to skip all that stuff. We're just going to get right into the meat and potatoes here. Both shows that we're doing right now, you are directing both of them, and you wrote both of them. But first, I want to focus on Voices in the Attic, because that's the one we're working on the most, and that's the one that opens first.
Yes.
When did you write Voices in the Attic?
30 years ago.
Oh,
wow.
My God.
Yeah, 30 years ago. Yep. It was one of our it was our second to last show at the Riviera.
Okay.
And I wrote it deliberately. It was like a rebellious piece to bust us out of there. And I was so tired of trying to do marquee-friendly things.
Yeah.
That this is like the dark flip side of Halloween Dreams. And I love Halloween Dreams, but I thought I was doing things that, you know. And so then I thought, no, I'm going to write what I want to write. And I knew it was, you know, it's real horror, real scary Halloween stuff. So, and it was what I wanted to write. So 30 years ago, we haven't done it since, you know, we did it 30 years ago. And now we're doing it again. And it's fun to revisit. It's
yeah.
fun to sort of remember that breaking out and just say, no, this is what I want to write. Like it, don't like, I don't care, but this is what I'm writing now. I wanted a storefront theater. So it was this show which really started the ball rolling for us to get our theater.
That's awesome.
You know, broke us out.
And, what you was know. Your reason for waiting 30 years, another 30?
I don't know. I guess it had done its job, sort of, and I don't know. I guess so I just forgot about it, and then DJ was saying, well, gee, what else do you have? And I said, well, there's this one called Voices in the Attic, which I've always kind of liked. And he said, well, let me read it. And so he read it and liked it. So I thought, well, it still, you know, holds up after 30 years. And I know, so there we are. Then we're doing it again. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember reading it over. I don't remember what our other options were. I don't know that we had any other options, but we picked Spiral Staircase, and I'm like, well, like, we have to do something that's us. Like, we wanted to come back big, and I read it, and I just fell in love with it. It's so fun. It's so cool, and it is horror. Like, but there are – it's funny that you say Halloween Dreams, because there are so many parts that remind me of Halloween Dreams, but instead of like having the warm feeling, then it like comes back around and like scares you. Like,
yes, kind of- yes, yeah. And there's funny parts.
Oh, for sure. There's, yeah.
You know, it's well rounded. I think it has some scary and funny, and yeah.
Yeah. Where did any of it come from? Because it's so. For the people who don't know, if you want to break it down, like what the pro, I don't know, that I can't speak, but like the plot, I guess, where it's multiple different stories.
Well, I've always liked horror is always like the anthology things. I remember once when I was little, seeing Tales from the Crypt, not the one with the skeleton, the silly one, you know, on TV. This was the British movie. Joan Collins was in it, and she was a young person, so that shows you how old, long ago. 1972, I believe it was. We saw it at the Riviera, oddly enough. And it's sometimes in horror, a story doesn't warrant a whole treatment. So what do? Just not do it. And so it started to become popular in film. Of course, Stephen King did Creepshow 1 and Creepshow 2. The Hammer Studios had done a bunch of anthologies. Roger Corman did some anthologies, you know, of Poe's work, you know. So that always appealed to me, the idea of doing six stories that maybe didn't warrant a full treatment, but together would be. And then you have the option, you know, people are right away going to say what's their favorite, what story they like the most.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And it's, you know, and then nobody's having to sustain a two-hour role. You know, so I'm drawn to the anthology kind of thing. I think we've done a bunch of them. Here We Sit, Dance Macabre, and this was the first one. And as a playwright, it's kind of safe because you're writing short scenes. There's one act in it. It all ends up with What Miss Ruby Knows, and that's sort of a one act. I mean, a full on one act. But the first five pieces are shorter, like 10-minute, you know. Pieces, yeah. So six stories. You get six stories for the price of one.
Yeah. Where did the idea for any of them come from? Like specifically, do you remember? And what's your favorite?
I think I was just trying to do, you know, do kind of a studied approach. Like, they're all archetypes.
Yeah.
There's a witch story. Not giving too much away. There's an entrapment story, a paranoia where everybody's against somebody. That's a popular theme in anthologies. I wanted to do a definitive, the deep woods, the forest, yeah. The scary medieval forest. You know, what is going on in there? And so that's probably Effigy and the piece that we called Voices in the Attic after the name of the show, which is a piece that. How far can your imagination go? How far can nightmares go? That kind of thing. And so I think those are my two favorite of the pieces that as I wrote them.
Yeah.
You know, and then, that's, you know, they kind of came out of trying to do, I know I overwrote too. I know I probably had 10 stories and then I whittled it down to six. And I'm sure I never throw anything away. I'm sure maybe some of them cropped up in, what was that? Tales from the Ghostlighter.
Yeah.
Or whatever we call that.
Yeah, Tales from the Ghostlighter.
Yeah, yeah. Some of those were maybe leftovers from the original Voices in the Attic. I don't remember, but I think some of them might have been.
Yeah, I agree with your two favorites. I love The Effigy. That's the one that I connected with immediately reading it. It's just so cool. I can't wait for the audience to see that.
It's
Are
fun.
You in that one?
I am.
He is in that. Yes, he's very good in that. So you see DJ back on stage after a hiatus of getting up there. That one is so, those 1950 horror comics that Stephen King was so taken with as a child and what made him start writing. I always had a bunch of them. And they're so, you know, specific. They're so, this is the story. This is not holding anything back. And the drawings, you know, and they really influenced a lot of a lot of horror filmmakers from the 70s, 60s, 70s, and on. And I think that's why Stephen King made Creepshow, you know, deliberately to go and get some of those comic, you know. those scary, all of a sudden comic books could be scary and horror themes and stuff. I loved them. I just couldn't get enough of them as a child. And so the effigy is kind of the tribute to that.
Yeah.
I can see that, the panels. I can see that as a gruesome comic book story. And so, yeah, I enjoy that one a lot.
It's funny that you say that, because when I first read it, the way you word everything and even the stage directions, everything was so clear to me. Like, I had just such a clear vision of how everything was going to look. And like, that's just a crazy talent that you have.
Oh, thank you.
Is this the one that I think, like, you are the character?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's funny that you wrote this before he was actually born, because I swear it's just him.
Okay,
yeah.
But it's not the bad part. There's so much bad about him. It's like, it's not yeah. those parts.
No, it is those parts.
I definitely connected with that character and that scene immediately, because it's so fun. It's so, like, I feel like it's, you said like 50s comics. To me, what I got when I first was like an 80s slasher.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just spot
on. I think 80s slasher films owe a lot to those comic books.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know,
yeah.
The way that they'd set it up and tell it and sort of no sentiment. And just kind of like an adult fairy tale.
Yeah.
And we're going to go into the woods. Bad idea. Things are going to happen. You know, who's going to survive? What, you know, so that was my tribute, to those comic books of the. So I'm glad it works visually. I'm glad that it works like that.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I love that nothing's off limits in the whole play. And it's. Not from the approach of like, oh, like this is, we're going this far to like scare you or something. It's like, oh, you're uncomfortable. Good. You should be uncomfortable, because like this is real life. So it's like, it's not like, I don't know. It's so timeless. I feel the whole thing. You said he wrote it 30 years ago. You could have written it yesterday. And I think everything still would completely stand.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. Good. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot in the kids scene. Which I loved immediately when I read it, not giving anything away. But there's a lot of stuff in it that's like, this is truly horrifying for different reasons. And it's like, yes, you should be uncomfortable seeing this, because this is real life. And like it reoccurs throughout the whole thing. It's like, this is, and I think it's so like artistic and so cool. And the mashup of genres, where it's like, if the effigy is like a slasher one, then like. The first one, Tarantella, could be a horror movie on its own today. Like, I could see all these artsy people going and seeing that one and being like, wow, this is like, they just all have such a different vibe to them.
Oh, cool. I'm glad that's coming through.
Is the audience seeing things happening on stage, or are they just imagining through dialogue what is going on?
No, they're fully staged. No, they're staged. There's quite a bit of action, quite a bit of outrageous. The one is about nightmares, and once you're telling children telling nightmares, all bets are off. Mm. Anything can happen. We could do anything. We can see anything, because as they tell them, that we act them out. And so there's some, I think, universal fears. You know, when we have our nightmares, and so that's explored.
Yes.
And that's one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite parts within that. You know, that scene.
Yeah.
I think is there's a couple nightmares that we act out that I think are really, you know, visually, you know, fun and also very telling.
Yeah.
Very very like, oh my, that's really, they didn't pull any punches. Like Halloween, the real Halloween. Like no sentiment, and just we're going to scare you. We are going, and that's why we tried to put on the poster those vintage. Ari made wonderful vintage masks, and we put them all on the poster for the one scene for the What Miss Ruby Knows, and I think they're going to be. I can't wait to see them all on the actors, and you know,
the poster's just awesome.
Yeah, I said yeah.
I love the poster. I think it's. Horrifying. Like it's cool, it's vintage, it's but also timeless, because like you could have told us that photo was taken 40 years ago, 50 years ago, and I don't know, I really love how it's written. I love the style that it's in, because like what you said, Alex, or like is are they imagining stuff? I think it's a good mix. Like obviously we act everything out and we do the actions, but like the way that you've handled the set, where it's very minimum and bare bones, it's like it's just like this weird, creepy world that as an audience member you're walking into, and you're seeing like these people put on these horrifying stories on stage. So like there's still the aspect of like, okay, this is like being acted out, I suppose. I don't know. It's just, it's a really cool thing that you've created with this, where it's a bare set and actors and the stories like carry everything.
And I think part of the fun for the audience is you have no idea. I promise you, you have no idea what's coming next.
Yes.
And that's the point.
Yeah.
That's the point. How can you really just sit down and say, it's Halloween night, we're going to tell six stories, and just sit back and let them happen to you. There's no way to predict how each one's going to end. There's twists, and it's all for fun. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the idea of taking your love for Halloween and taking all, like, there's a one piece, the second act opens with a piece that's a tribute to Edgar Allan Poe, because I can't do anything without a tribute to him. And so one of his biggest fears, there's a little hint, but I won't say anymore, his biggest fears his whole life we deal with. And that, to me, is fun.
Yeah.
Where you say, okay, you want to be scared? You want to have a scary story? Sit down. We're gonna dim the lights, and you're going to have no idea what's about to happen. And it's going to go on and on and on. And to me, I try to write for myself in the audience. People say, well, as a playwright, where are you? I go, I'm in the audience. What do I want to see? I'd like this to happen. Then I would like this to happen. I would be the best audience for this, because I would be delighted. First of all, I would appreciate the effort that went into it and say, this is a fun, a bunch of stories that I've never heard before.
Yeah.
You know, they're not familiar. They're new. They're new and they seem familiar in the genre, but they're new stories. So I'm hoping the audience will be delighted with that.
Yeah. No, I agree. I love it. And it's new. Like you said, it really is new. And I would love to be an audience member. I love nothing more than being in it, being part of it. But I would love to come in as an audience member and just like go on this journey and just see it kind of play out. Because it's twisted and it's fun and it's...
There's people that still come up from seeing it 30 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Crazy. And they'll say a phrase to me. They'll say, wait a minute, there was something. I won't repeat it because we'll see what happens. Catherine remembers seeing it as a child on the Riviera stage, and that's what she tried out. She said her mother remembers. She goes, oh, my God. Her mother said, I have to go see that again. She said, was that the one of the ladders? Everyone remembers. It's a ladder. There's a bunch of ladders on stage. Yeah. That's the one. And so she tried out. But she remembered from 30 years ago. Odd.
Yeah.
Odd, the things that people, you know, stick in people's heads.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that we haven't talked about yet is in between all of these mini stories, these mini movies really, are a bunch of poems and little stories that you have written. And that's something I'd love to, like, break down on the podcast, like, one time, like, maybe after the show's over, so we're not spoiling everything. But those are fantastic and like are even more like little stories within themselves. And it's just, it really is. It's new, it's different, and it's super artistic. Like I would love, like you said, to be in the audience, 'cause I would love every minute of this.
Oh, well, I'm glad those. Yeah, there's like a Greek chorus that very briefly, they're very brief recitations of verse, 'cause I had never written any verse before. And it's kind of like Dr. Seuss meets I don't know who. And, it kind of sets the tone. They come out when we're changing the set. The different people will speak in verse. And you got to pay attention, because if, you know, there's clues for what you're about to see, what you have seen. And I like that. That's one of my favorite parts. And I'm always thinking I should cut them. You know, I was the other night when a rehearsal wasn't going so well. Last night, I thought I'm cutting them. I'm cutting them. I'm just cutting them. I don't know. But you know, that happens. You have rough rehearsals, and then you know, you dust yourself off and go back in and say, all right, everybody, everybody, get up there. And we'll get it. We'll get it. You know, we will. Yeah, and it wasn't the way anybody was doing it. You know, you doubt. I'm not that person who wrote this, so I don't remember what it felt like. I don't remember who I was 30 years ago. And there's some things that seem foreign to me. So people, the cast is, you know, they ask me questions like I'm the authority on it. And I wrote it 30 years ago. So what did you have for dinner 30 years ago? Do you I mean? Some of it does. I don't remember. Why did you do? I don't know. I don't know. It sounds. I don't know. I really don't. Yeah. So that's frustrating. That's more frustrating than I anticipated. And parts I doubt. I don't like. It's like, well, if you drew, you're not even 30. You drew something when you're 1 year old, and someone makes you dig it out again and deal with it. So that's more of a challenge, you know, than I thought. And so I'm trying real hard not to color. Thinking, oh, who wrote this? You know, to me, this parts are archaic, and I don't write like that anymore. Because you compare Voices in the Attic and Spirits of the Dead, two different playwrights, two different.
Yeah.
And I'm all about, I'm enjoying Spirits of the Dead because it's me today.
Yes.
I know every word.
Interesting.
Why
yeah.
I picked, everything what I picked, and the short brief, and I love that one. I love them both. But I'm being asked to go back and try and remember what I was thinking 30 years ago.
Right.
And sometimes I'm coming up with a, you know, but in some way, then the actors make it new. So you fill it in. I don't have.
Yeah, it can stand on its own today.
That's right. You're right. And it's like you said, it seems timeless. Good. Because sometimes I do feel like I don't have the answer. You say, oh, the playwrights in the room ask, I don't know. I don't know. Don't ask me. So that's my only frustration with it. And I think it bleeds out on the cast. I think I pace a lot. I'm like, and it's only because I'm trying to rectify. What the heck did I write? Why did I? If I would have cut it to where I would do it today, it would be about half as long. And I tried to look at it and cut it, and I don't even know how to cut it. I don't know how to. I don't know where the seams are anymore. Mm.
Yeah.
I don't. So I. Okay. It's not been an easy go. But an interesting one, you know, an interesting for myself, you know, as a playwright to go back and even all through the night, which I wrote before that, you know, sometimes, as you know, it's difficult for me to.
Yes.
To because those things I do remember what I was thinking.
Right.
And a lot of times you don't want to touch that stove again.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah. Can I not? Can I, you know, every Christmas I got to touch that stuff. But that's okay. You know, you showed you. This one I'm not, I don't know what it's triggering. I don't know because I don't remember.
Right.
Other than the rebellion, other than the, this is my core. This is who I was, kind of angry and kind of like, I'm so sick of doing marquee friendly things in a theater that holds 1,100 seats. And if we got 100 people, we were excited. There's 1,000 empty seats. We're surrounded by 1,000 for 8 years.
Right.
8 years. And so I was done. I was done. I was like, and then this came out of it. So that's all I remember is kind of the rage, kind of the, I wanted to lash out, and then get us out, which it works.
That's
so
interesting, though. Like, you can reflect back on your past work and associate it with a certain time of your life and what was going on.
Yes,
and maybe
yes.
That, like, influenced your writing.
Yes, that definitely. I mean, and the more we worked on it, I came back. It's coming back to me. I thought, oh, Lordy, I was really burning bridges with this one. and gladly.
Yeah.
Because last year you had a nice family Christmas show, Halloween show. Yeah, not this year. No, this is what we have this year.
Yeah.
And wait till next year. And I knew. And then after Christmas, I said, we're done. We're not coming back here no more. And so that was that fall, and I knew it was kind of like the, and then we're out. We on our way out, we packed up our set, and they go, "Oh, you'll be back." I'm like, "No, we won't."
Wow.
And so we went back to the schools for that winter classic, and stayed there for 5 years till we got our church.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is huge that way. So it's a milestone, the jumping off place. I thought, well, maybe we'll just, I don't care, but I won't be responsible for trying to fill this place up.
Yeah.
And as well, if you picked, you know, place that everybody liked to see. And like, I don't know what everybody wants to see. I don't know how I'm going to get 1,000 people in here.
Right.
Every performance.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone can do that.
No.
So.
No.
That's where we were, and that's where this all came from.
That's interesting. I like that.
Yeah.
And I do love it. I love the piece. I'm excited for people to see it and get that audience feedback. I'm very excited.
Good. Me too. Thank you. I mean, well, yes.
Do you remember the reception the first time around?
Well, some people are still talking about it, and people who got it, got it. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, how fun. Oh, my gosh. It was artistic. That's what they'd say. They came in. There were just ladders all across this, 30 ladders on the Riviera stage and people around them. And it's like, where's the set? We've been making all these beautiful sets. No, ain't no set. Just ladders. And people, like artsy people, said, oh, I love that. And people, like, where's the set? Where's the... they were the ones I wanted. That's what I wanted. I go, yeah, this is the new us. And so that, I do remember that. I remember people saying, wow, they didn't think we were still capable of doing that anymore. We had become so bland. We'd become so, it's someone who I wasn't. And, mm-hmm. and at the moment I didn't care if anybody else was. I thought, well, then you stay here. Y'all stay and do plays here. I'm not, I'm out. And it was that play that just triggered it. So I had forgotten a lot of that until we were working on it. And then I thought, yeah, this was my big rebellious piece. And now when I feel like I can tell my story, like it, don't like it, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to assemble a group. I'm not trying to please anyone. I'm not trying to please matinee crowds. I have no interest in that. I tell my story, like it, don't like it. I'm fine with that.
Right.
But when you're paying the bill, when you have such a huge place, mm-hmm. and we were trying to... Horrible, horrible. And the more money we would make, they would take it all. It would take it. They just took it.
Right.
It was horrible. It was just horrible. So all of that 8 years of that came out in this piece.
Okay.
So if nothing else, it's kind of fun to celebrate it.
Yeah.
And say, this was a turning point for... And I think we are who we are. There would have been no Poe show, the second Poe show, without this one. There would have been no Dance Macabre.
Right.
Without this one. So I think... This was a real turning point for not just me, but for Ghost Light Theater.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a really great companion piece to put with Spirits of the Dead, which is our story. Before we get into Spirits, where, because I've been asked this before too, where, I guess, did the decision come from to not do Night of the Living Dead again?
Well, I was tired of it.
Yeah.
When you're like, you have a group and you talk to people and you say, and you get a sense of it.
Yeah.
And we were all kind of like, we had done that with Christmas Carol. We had done Christmas Carol every year for 5 or 6 years. We had done All Through the Night every year for 5 to 6 years. I was sick to death of it. So I was done with zombies. And so I said, you and I were talking about what's a companion piece. I was looking, I was trying to find something that would be as, compelling and as timely as Night of the Living Dead, which we'll come back to because I love it, but not every year. Yeah. I don't love it every year. And so I thought, I can't run the zombies anymore, so we got to find something. So I thought, why don't we tell our story? We have a remarkable story. For years, as soon as we got the Ghost Light Theater, we thought we should be doing something for Halloween. We should be doing something. We should be, someone said Haunted House. Well, we had done Haunted House with the Youth Center for 10, 12 years. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And for a little return, So as a theater, we should do a show. So when we finally came around to Night of Living Dead and then got tired of that, so then we said, we'll tell our own story. Why don't we tell our own story? Nobody has our story. And so that's when that came about. The question is... at first was, well, will this, appeal to the Night of the Living Dead audience? And after long, hard thought, I decided I don't care.
Right.
I don't care. We don't have an audience for Night of the Living Dead. It's a scatter shot. We have some of the young kids come in because it's a much better deal than Haunted House. You spend you spend $30-$40 for 10 minutes to go through a haunted house. You sit there for 90 minutes in a movie. You're actually in the movie. So it's a great idea. It's great for us, just not every year.
Yeah.
And so then we said, well, what can be something we can alternate with it? Now, I don't know if this will track. I have no idea. People might say, okay, whatever. I don't know. So we, you know, the ideal would be that it would be something we could rotate.
Yeah.
And if we have something else, throw that in there too as a fundraiser, you know. So I thought, well, our story is every bit as compelling with a lot less blood than the zombie play. And so that was it. Remember, we had talked about coming up with, and then I thought, you know, ours not only is good enough, I thought maybe for some people they'll prefer this true-to-life ghost story.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's a lot of fun, too. It's not just... we talked about the writing of Night of the Living Dead, and it's just... you don't come for the writing. You come for the zombies.
Yep.
It's just a spectacle. This is actually... And I love it. I love doing Night of the Living Dead. I think I said on here already, I miss being a zombie, and this is the first year not doing it. I love spirits. I love being in it, and I would not want to be doing Night of the Living Dead, but it's just fun to to get dressed up the first time to be a zombie, and then it's not fun any of the other times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this is actually a well-rounded piece where you come for the story, you're gonna laugh, you're gonna feel something, you're gonna get spooked. Like, it has everything. So I think it's a much better, not only show, but like deal to come and see this rather than zombies.
Yeah, and I think it's a good counterpart to Voices, too, because, like you said, Spirits isn't, like, gore and blood and all of that, and the first one, Voices, has more of, like, a, I don't know, I'm not in it, so I don't really know, but, like, from what you're saying, like, a spooky, scary vibe, and, like, the audience can get the best of both worlds.
Yes, for sure. And it's all true, so, like, where did the idea of that come from? How did you comb through the stories and pick what went in?
I started going back to the beginning. There's a bunch of stories that we sort of had forgotten that we were there once we started telling, because it was 23 years ago.
Yeah.
And then we have a lot of people reporting things, but, you know, you have to kind of cull through all that. I wanted to make sure there was some veracity to these stories.
For sure.
When you have a paranormal experience, it makes you very leery of everybody else's. Instead of thinking, I know we have ghosts here, I'm going to believe everything anyone tells me. And that's quite the opposite.
Yes.
Like most, 99%, I say, I don't believe you. Either you're just making it up or you just think you saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had some... You know, we collected a bunch of people would tell their little anecdotal kind of stories, and we collected them all for the book. And I looked through some of those. I had all my stories that I remembered for the past couple of years. And, you know, the biggies, the big stars of the ghost light, the Lady in Red, the Shadow Man, you know, they're told several stories about that. And I kind of went back to most of the stories are either me that happened to me, happened to someone with my same last name. Your stories are in there.
Yep.
Mike's stories in there. Deb's stories are in there. Joanne's stories. Jesse, quite a bit of Jesse's stories.
Yes.
In there, my brother Jesse. So it was all kind of, I could verify everything that was, you know, so anything that came along and said, I don't know. I can't prove it. I can't. So it was kind of a high bar to jump over, that the story had to fit with our narrative. It had to be something that I know for a fact that either someone that I rely on, and, you know, it's natural people will come along and say, oh, we know these spirits.
Yeah.
I don't do that. I don't. Yeah, I'm not sure. When we have ghost hunts now, the name. This one was that, and this one. I go, okay. First of all, you don't know that,
right?
And I did, so I shied away from all that. And the same with sort of So there's none of that. Most of the stories are from when we first got the place, and we didn't know how to deal with what was happening.
Yeah,
and those stories had not been told in the mostly because we forgot them.
Yeah,
I mean, once I went back to some of my original jottings and stuff like that, I thought, oh my gosh, I forgot about that, and things that kind of set the patterns. Like a lot of times, people repeat, oh, we saw this or we saw that. It's like, oh yeah, that's kind of the legend of the building, and that's great.
Yeah,
that's perpetrated and that it keeps going on and on. But so that was kind of my. How I assembled the story, and along the way decided to tell our story.
Yeah.
Younger-ish people, 23 years ago, inherited a haunted theater.
Yeah.
We were just a bunch of dumb kids. I wasn't, but they... we inherited a haunted theater. And that's interesting. That's compelling to me.
Yeah.
So I said, we have to tell that story. We have to tell what it's like to all of a sudden find yourself in this situation. So there's a lot of comedy in it. There's a lot of theater behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know what it's like to be part of the ghost site. And I think there's a lot more humor in it than I thought, and a lot more scares. I mean, at any moment in rehearsal, I say, wait a minute, this actually happened. I think the audience will be like, wait a minute, you're telling me this happened?
Yeah.
Like, yes, this happened. It would not be on our stage if it didn't happen.
Right.
I think that will be the most startling thing for the audience. I think because it's 23 years compressed into 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So they'll be like, how do people even stay in this building? Well, understand this is 23 years.
Right, right. Yeah.
Condensed down to and all the greatest hits, all the best things that ever happened, all the most compelling. The thing that surprised me, there's 27 scenes. And they're not anecdotal. There's a narrative, and there's characters, six characters. You two are two of them. And they're not a surprise to me, but I stumbled on them, and they became the you six are composites of everyone who ever told a story. But you're individuals. You're making them people. I love it. I love the six of you carrying our story. And telling our story as six, characters. And so I think the audience will enjoy getting to know those people and at the end of the day say, yeah, that's what it was like.
Yeah.
That's what happened to us and continues to happen to us. And I think there's another one where I'd like to be sitting in the audience and say, wait a minute, a minute. This is, this all happened and is happening. And I say happened, but it's happening during the show. I have no doubt we'll have things happening during the show.
Yeah.
We've set up some things. We set up some opportunities where something could happen.
Right.
Which would be great. That would be cool.
Wouldn't it be awesome? And it might. Yeah. It might. You're sitting in the haunted theater telling a story about the haunted theater that you're sitting in. And so I think it's a no-brainer. It just took us 23 years to figure it out.
Yeah.
How to tell our story and how to go about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to be in this because I have not encountered any paranormal activity. And I'm typically not at the theater alone. So like,
right.
How much am I really going to experience with a whole group of people? I don't know. But I can like sort of live out other people's experiences that they had.
Well, and that's the thing, too. It's like you don't know how many stories that you and I hear all the time. Like people come up like some man just came out and disappeared in thin air. It's like, okay, I'm sure that happened to you. And it's just all the time people are telling stories.
Yep.
So then you kind of forget, like, yeah, sure, right, I'm sure. And then when something happens to you, like you said before, then you're like, oh, wait, yeah, no, this is – like there is something. Not all the stories are going to be true, but there is certainly something.
Yes.
Something in this building.
You feel kind of hypocritical about it, saying, yeah, I know the place is haunted, but I don't believe you.
Yes.
Not a bit. Not a bit. But you have to try to debunk everything.
Yeah.
Try to debunk it all. Try to say, okay, hogwash. until you can't anymore. Until you're like, well, wait a minute. Two separate people on two separate occasions saw somebody and described them to the T.
Right.
Like, what? What? There's certain scientific principles, things. So to make it onto our stage, I had to pass that mustard of being credible. And the whole notion, one of my favorite aspects of it is the collection of spirits, Spirits of the Dead, after Edgar Allan Poe poem, my favorite of his poems, that notion that we're not alone there. And how do we interpret that? How do we interpret the many sounds?
Yeah.
How do we interpret the many shadows, the many sightings, many sounds, songs? How do we do that? And I think we came up with a cool way, and we got a marvelous group that is working on that.
Yeah.
And I think it's an ensemble like no other. And I think as an actor, I think it'd be more fun than zombies to bring to life, as it were, the spirits of the dead. And the real core of the fact that we are not alone in a huge way in that building, and have them enact that story, enact that all those happenings that are prescribed to a group, not an individual.
Yeah.
We heard a group moving around upstairs where the church was on a Sunday morning, and they're moving furniture, and they're walking and whispering, and I can't make it out. How do you tell that? How do you share that? And then you have someone else come and say, well, I heard, you know. So all of those stories are collected, and we're presenting them with this wonderful ensemble.
Yeah.
Who kind of float through the whole piece. And I have such high hopes of, and they're kind of taking over. There's you six, which are featured.
Yeah.
And then the flip side of that is the ensemble.
Yeah.
And there we're coming up with, and they keep popping up in every scene.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying that. And I feel there's a certain, you know, satisfaction of telling our story how we see it.
Yeah.
You know, how we feel it. And see what the audience thinks about that.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love, we talked about it early on, that you wanted to get six people who are close. And we talked about this last episode, doing not giving anything away. We had to choreograph a dance. my mom came in and choreographed the dance. And just doing that was so much fun with those five other people. So like it's been so fun to put this together.
That was a great rehearsal. I feel like I haven't laughed like that in a while. I was crying.
Yeah.
that's gonna be a wonderful standout scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's dancing, there's singing. It's got everything.
There is singing,
Yeah. Wow. Beautiful singing. Yeah. Beautiful singing. And it all tells a story.
Yeah.
It all tells there'll be people in the audience nodding. I was there for that. I saw that. I remember that.
Yeah.
I know there'll be people nodding, adding to our, you know, okay, yep. Joanne already said, I can't wait to see it. She has no idea what I've put together. She has no idea. And she said, she keeps telling me every time, I cannot wait to see our story up there. I know she'll be out there. She'll be not, yep. She could attest to every, to the people from the beginning, Jesse, Deb, Julie, Carl, nothing should surprise them. You know, if there's one that can wait, I'm not sure. When did that happen? Where the heck did you get that?
Right.
I don't think there'll be any of that.
All right.
These are universal. These are ones that we all came up with. And I was talking to Deb about choreographing that, and I said, you remember this, right? From Sleepy Hollow, and it came back like she goes, yes, that happened. And you are in it now. That exact thing happened, witnessed by 16 people on stage.
Right.
Witnessed. Well, raise your hand. Raise your hand if you just saw what I saw. And so to play that out and to actually do the dance number, and you guys are up there dancing.
Yeah.
And then have the choreographer remember, I said, you were on stage with us. We were dancing in Sleepy Hollow, the big party scene, in a rehearsal.
Right.
In a sweaty rehearsal. And that happened. That's an intrigue. We'll leave that out there for, you know, that happened, what actually happened, and we play it out. And, yeah, yeah. And to have her remember, oh, Mike. So then it clicked what we're telling. And she never read the script. She didn't read the script.
Right.
All I said was, here's the song. Will you choreograph? And she was good enough to come in and perfect. Oh, I love that dance. I love it. I love it, love it, love it. now we have a dance captain, so
yeah.
She'll keep you honest, and Taylor will, and she's got a big broom up there, so you got to behave.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, you got.
I know it. Ryan and I were already talking yesterday because Ryan and I dancing is just not a natural thing.
They were the two weakest links.
Absolutely, and I could have told you that coming into it. We were talking about it yesterday. Like, well, we got to remember that. We got to yeah. hope that we remember that dance even somewhat.
Yeah, because we're only once a week.
And
so
the good thing, the good thing about it is it's a rehearsal.
Yeah.
And there's
that's what we kept saying the
story
whole time.
Of Ghostlight Theater. We have uneven dancers. Yeah. I've had to get up there and dance. That's the point too. Like the techie, all six that you're representing. No, you're all dancing because we need bodies.
Yes.
And so the fact that I thought that was, you know, when I hit on that and said, oh, no, let's do the dance.
Yeah.
Because that was the moment we're all sweaty and trying to get the broom dance, this wonderful broom dance, and this wonderful music for Sleepy Hollow. And this very public thing happens. And we're like, what? What was that? What was that? And to play that out and share that with the audience to say, well, what does it mean? I don't know. I don't know. I think we sort of, there's a narrative that presents itself that I never intended. You know, as the audience starts connecting the dots, and there's answers, but I think the audience supplies them.
Okay.
You know, you'll see. Yeah, I mean, you already see. You know, like who Ben is playing.
Oh, right.
We
right.
sort of learn his story, or we assume his story.
Yeah.
Because as events escalate.
Yeah.
We know, well, what's going on there? The who Tracy's playing.
Right.
Her story emerges. Not with all the answers.
Right.
We have very few answers. We, you know, but I think some things come into focus that the audience will say, Oh, so that's this one and this is that one and
yes.
and this is what's happening over here and this is probably and I think and that was never intended.
Right.
That's just gravy.
Right.
We took, you know, how do you assemble 27 scenes? I just kind of mixed them up and they seemed to tell a story. Yeah. Very weird.
Yeah. I'm very excited for, like you said, Joanne and Deb and Jesse to see it and just talk to them afterwards and see. Because like, this play is going to be very special to a lot of people just because it is the story. And like, yeah, if you've done anything with us, and like I think it'll be special to you. So I'm excited to get the audience reaction to this one.
Same. And I have no idea what it will be.
Yeah,
I have no idea. I know things are funny. I know things are serious. I know things. I think it's kind of artfully pieced together. You know,
I think things are funny even when they're not meant to be funny, just because of who is in it.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. And that's the thing, too. When you know this kind of, and it's kind of like I keep saying the Scooby-Doo factor, but Scooby-Doo has the four detectives, all different characters. I have six telling this story.
Yeah.
And you're very much individual people. You're not a composite, whereas you're an individual. And we get to know you really quick. We get to know you. You guys sketch out the character. And then now we see what happens when you come face to face with something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one character we already, you know, there's got the scaredy cat. We got the brainiac. We got the wise acre.
Yeah.
We got, you know, we got the humorless leader. How are they all sort of going to react? And I think you're right. I think sometimes it's comic because you're like, what did we do? What did we inherit here? What, you know, what do we got here? and what to do about it.
Right.
When you have no money and you have this huge building and you say, oh, by the way, it's haunted. We don't have time for that. We barely have time to you know, put a roof on and get furnaces. Now. So don't. And so I think we put it off for a while. And then when we were able to, oh, yeah, what are we going to do about the ghost thing? Maybe we should do something about that. And then we said, I don't know, what do you do with the ghost? And that's the story we tell. Like, what did we do? How do we come to terms? If we have come to terms, what seems to have settled? What is still not settled? What are we still struggling with?
Yeah, have you noticed throughout the years a decline in the activity?
Yes, yes. There was definitely. We were not wanted. That's why that first scene. We were definitely not wanted. And it changed. It changed. I think we showed our intent. You know, there's a lot of abandoned churches, and unfortunately, and we were able to fix it and make it our own. And
yeah,
you know, so. It has changed, and I think for a while it kind of just mellowed out, and we coexist there now, and that's kind of the status. So we're going to go back and tell when it wasn't so peaceful,
yeah.
When it was trying to hammer out an agreement, it definitely, the vibe has changed there. It was very hostile when we first got there.
Wow.
It was very scary and very, very hostile and very like, who are you? And rightfully so. And I say, no, we're the intruders. We need to remind ourselves every day, we're the intruders. They were here for 111 years. And whatever's still there, whatever has a claim on the building, we're the intruders. We're the visitors. And we always have to give that respect. And once they realize that we will do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have your way, and you can have your spots and your places. And on the other night at the ghost hunt, it was a great hunt. It was a great, wasn't it, DJ?
It was a lot of fun, yes.
Tracy and her group went up to the furnace room. They had doing the dowsing rods. They opened the furnace room and asked questions. And it was go away. It was like, leave me alone. It was such a hostile reaction. Do you want to talk? No! The sticks just went almost flying out of her hand. They closed the door and walked away. She said, "I'm going to mess with that."
Right.
And were you with that group? Is that what?
No, I was not.
Yeah, yeah. So, but she, this was her first ghost hunt that she was mm-hmm. active in, and she said, "No, it was such a like, no, don't bother me." She closed the door and walked away, and that was that.
Yeah.
And she knew enough to do that, but we got some wonderful. The most compelling. Let me just share this one. It's very short. Up in the costume room, they were asking questions with the dowsing rods, and that group said they didn't want them to leave. The ghosts were talking through the whole thing. Yes, no, the things, and they were spinning like helicopters when they, you know. Well, asked about, she determined, were you alive in the 20s? Yes. The 30s? Yes. The 40s? Yes. The 50s? No. Okay, so, you know, 30s, 40s. It's a German congregation, remember? And then asked, she said, are you German? And a violent no. I said, are you German-American? Yes.
Wow.
And World War II.
Yeah.
You ask somebody from the 30s and 40s if they're German. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
a no.
They're like,
that's
no.
A big no.
Yeah.
And it was, she said, it almost flew out of my hands. Almost flew out of her hands. And it said, no. And she goes, are you a German-American? Real calm, yes. To me, that's compelling. It makes sense. We're a German congregation. The 30s, the 40s, we know what happened during those times and what it must have felt like to be an American and say, hey, you're the bad guys, aren't you? You know how they live. All that story happened in a one yes and one no.
Yeah.
And it makes sense.
Yeah.
See, those are the type of things you want to weave into a story and say, it could have said anything. It could have said, you know, no, you can connect those dots, I think, reasonably well and say, yeah, that sounds legit to me.
Yeah.
And up in the casting room, which was the music room, which was the adult choir room up there. Very cool.
Yeah.
Just stuff like when stuff like that happens. That happened that night. That by itself would have been enough. But we had so many other things that happened. So it was a good hunt.
It was.
It was a very good, very productive.
Good. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So those are both of our shows. They kick off our season. Come see them. I mean, they're going to be fantastic. Last question as we're wrapping this whole thing up. As we start the season off, what's your opinion on the new season? We haven't gotten you on. Last year, I loved when you came on and talked about last season and this new season. I loved it was you, Dan, and Vanessa.
Yes.
I loved that episode.
We had fun.
So what's your opinion on the new season? What are you most looking forward to coming up this year?
Me first?
Yes. Yeah,
Coming back to Christmas Carol.
Yes.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And that was the first time we did it was 1985. So this is our 40th anniversary. 40th anniversary. Oh, my gosh. And so to come back to that, we've been off at 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. Some absurd number like that. 5 or 6. Yeah.
Yes. And, of course, I'm excited about the two musicals. I love the music from Hunchback and adding a musical right in the middle of the that's going to be an interesting see how that plays out.
Yeah.
I love Good Doctor. That's a nostalgic pick for me. I staged it. This would be my fourth time, but I haven't staged it in 30 years.
Wow.
For a couple years, I staged it for Town Players. I staged it for Villa Maria College, and I staged it at the Riviera Theater. And it was my go-to Neil Simon comedy because he is based on Anton Chekhov. And it's very nostalgic for me. That's my pick. If you know, I think people will enjoy it. It's funny. It's Neil Simon and Anton Chekhov. So I'm looking forward to that. So I think it's a good season.
Yeah.
I'm interested in hearing how you feel at the beginning of a season and then at the end of the season, if you still feel the same way.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think for you too, DJ, how to do two musicals.
Yep.
Yeah. We'll have to see. Yeah. I'm curious to see how that goes.
Yeah.
Because I know how much work a musical takes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And neither one is a little musical.
No.
You know, if it was a little musical, that'd be different, but it's not. Both are huge.
Yeah. And I think, so I'm very excited for Christmas Carol. Coming into the season, Voices is my number one, and now we're in it and doing it. So, like, I'm loving it. I really, really love working on Voices and Spirits. But Christmas Carol I've loved forever. Can't wait to get into that. I have so many ideas, and I just, I'm so excited.
That's going to be fun. I can't wait.
And then I'm very excited for Hunchback and Joseph. I think it would be really, really difficult to do two in a year that I didn't love. But the fact that I love both of these with all my heart, I think it's just going to be a joyous time for me working on it. But, yeah, I mean, I'm honest. I'm very honest about my experiences. So I'll come back on here and tell you if I'm right or wrong. But I'm truly looking forward to everything we've got this season. And I'm not familiar with Good Doctor, so I'm very interested in that. And
I already did it three times, but I haven't done it for over 30 years.
Yeah, right.
So I thought, you and I were talking about something that, you know, and I thought, Lottie Bernice is ha, ha, ha funny.
Yeah.
And nothing else is.
Right.
That's the problem. It's like, well, if you're going to get a laugh a minute, there's nothing else out. Someone will say this one or that one. Ugh. So this one is smart. It's theatrical, you know, and it's nostalgic for me. So yeah. I'm like, you know what? This one's for me. And it's so quaint. It's so like Fiddler on the Roof-ish. It's a little like these little rough Russian parables from Anton Chekhov. They're Anton Chekhov. Quaint little stories, and some of them are funny as heck. There's a song right in the middle of it. It's called A Play with Music. So technically, we're doing three musicals this year. It has a track.
Right.
And you play it through the whole thing, and then a couple in the park sing this beautiful song. The stranger, old man, old woman, they sing this beautiful, tears your heart out, how life kind of passes you by. And it just in the middle of this. So it has a little bit of everything, and I hope people find it as quaint as I do.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's buried between Hunchback and Joseph. we have nothing to lose, mm-hmm. and we have no expectations other than just to, yeah, we're that little odd comedy in the middle, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Sometimes the best, most interesting work comes out of that because you don't think anyone's paying attention.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened with Christmas Rose.
Absolutely.
We had nothing to lose. And nobody was paying attention.
Right.
Because all COVID wrecked this. We never thought it would come out of the ashes. So we thought, well, okay, well, let's just, if we get there, and everybody was taking these risks because no one was paying attention.
Yeah.
All the actors were able to, we just kind of hung out and said, yeah, this will come and go and, you know, whatever, but we'll have a good time. And then to have the reaction that we got was, I don't know. It's still trying to wrap my mind around that, but I think that's when no one pays. And so I'm hopefully good doctor that will kind of happen.
Yeah.
People will be surviving, recovering from Hunchback,
right.
gearing up for Joseph. And in the meantime, God, this tiny little Russian...
That's going to win all the awards.
Say, oh, by the way, that one that no one was paying attention to. But that's what happened there. And that's some. And I had to give it some thought. I thought, what happened there? We thought nobody was paying attention.
Yeah.
We had no expectation. Zero expectation.
Right.
Last time we tried this, we almost closed the theater and we fell down.
Yep.
And everyone didn't want to revisit it again because it had bad memories to it. And so I said, okay. So we had just sort of, let's have a good time and then we're done with it. We'll put it back on the shelf and, you know, but we will have finished it. And then, you know, the reaction, like, what? And sometimes that's about it better than if someone is sitting there watching every move, saying, you know, anybody have a high expectation? And we had no expectation.
Well, that was very much like Treasure Island. Like, everyone was like, that's, and I said it on here, like, if I had to guess what was going to carry the Starrys, obviously it was going to be Treasure Island, right? And then we did the whole season, and Christmas Rose was just a standout, and that was not even a thought.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, going into it, yeah.
No, and I think, but that was a gift. That was a gift that was given to the cast because we just had the most marvelous time. This is a wonderful group, just a wonderful. We'd show up and toddle around that set, have our fruitcake and talk, and we're all trapped there. And we had our duets. That got a little competitive, but just with ourselves.
Yeah.
Someone would nail a duet, so you'd see the next one go,
right.
Who do they think they are? I'm going to get them. And so we all had it kind of shining, kind of like for ourselves.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to come see this, so. Well, let's just and so we're in this little world that and then something that was a gift. We couldn't predict that, we couldn't plan it. And I wish that for every show, that we have no expectation and nobody thinks anybody is watching, and then you gotta take all these risks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You open up and even so I think cuz after we talked about it, I said, what the heck did happen there? And that's what happened.
Yeah.
And again, it wasn't anything we planned. It was just a low expectation, which story of my life.
It's the ultimate underdog. Christmas low Rose is the ultimate underdog.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's awesome.
And you don't know it when you're doing it. You don't know
no,
you're there.
No.
You don't even accept that you're in the running.
Yeah.
You just go like, well, you know, we're having a kind of a good time here.
Yeah.
And it wasn't flashy and all that. And we sort of knew All Through the Night had trumped us, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We had talked about the image of this big whale going by, and we were a suckerfish just trying to attach ourselves to it.
Yeah.
If we could just attach ourselves to this All Through the Night thing and just say, look, we're a part of that, that was our highest hope.
Yeah.
That was just our highest hope. So we were very humble about it, you know, and had no, if you know, and we'd laugh about that saying, yeah. And people say, oh, we wish we were watching All Through the Night. Like, okay. Well, you're not this year.
All right.
Wait, one last question.
Go shoot.
And maybe you don't want to answer this until both the shows are done, but do you have a preference between spirits and voices?
Voices is a wonderful memory of the past. For me, you know, it reminded me of my struggles as a playwright and really trying to find my true voice. And so that will always be special. This feels a little bit... Spirits feels to me a little bit like Christmas Rose to me, which is such a rare experience. I just, it's right now. We, you know, I wrote it right now. I wrote, this is how I talk. This is how I put things together right now after all these many, many years. And the fact that I can still put words on paper. So both, you know, I'm not trying to dodge it, but I think both have a special place in my heart. And Voices we only did once. So my expectations, I don't even know. And for the Spirits, it's so brand new too. So I think both. And yeah, I would say both are special and, you know.
Yeah, no, I liked your explanation.
All right. Thank you. That's all we got. We delivering on that hour episode promise.
Do we even make it an hour?
It's an hour and four.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Yay.
So thank you so much for coming on. I'm very excited for these two shows to
Me too. Thank you for having me again. Thank you.
Absolutely. Alex, any closing remarks from you?
I feel like you never ask me for closing
remarks. That's not true. I promise you that's not true.
No, I would just say when the performances are, which if I knew, I'd say. September 26th.
Yep. To
October
6th.
Oh, I was going to say 4th, but okay.
Is it the 6th?
I thought it goes like...
Yes. No, that's you're right.
Then the Spirits is the 17th and 27th.
17th to 27th.
We're going off to Halloween, then Halloween is 4 days after.
Yep. Yeah, so I have no time to set up. we'll get there. So come see the shows. Come support. They're fantastic. Everyone's working their butt off. So
We're in it. That's the reason.
That's right. That's your reason right there.
There it is. Yep. All right. Follow us on social media. And thank you for listening.